The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It's the dangerous new trend happening in schools and behind closed doors.
Then my head hit the wall.
It's called the Blackout Challenge, daring children to hold their breath until they pass out.
Heaps of my mates were doing it, so I just gave it a go.
But this 14-year-old vows to never do it again after one of his friends was taken to hospital.
I was a bit scared for him. Worried.
Last week, paramedics responded to an alarming number of calls where students had to be treated for seizures and head injuries.
There was 4 calls in 1 hour in southeast Queensland, and all of those children needed transport to hospital.
In the US, the challenge claimed the life of 10-year-old Nyla Anderson and left 12-year-old Joshua Haley-Yesus brain dead.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's another dangerous internet challenge that's making the rounds, and this one is leaving children dead. Dozens of children have died from trying these different challenges. I had heard a story about a father who was just trying to warn parents, and I want to just pass this along to you. If you have young kids, know what's on their cell phone, okay? There was a challenge on TikTok. It's known as the Blackout Challenge. And it's harming kids. And the father saying, you know, I know a lot of people say, oh, I don't want to invade my kids' privacy. Grow up. Be a parent. Make sure you know what your kid is looking at, right? His son, Caleb, went searching for his twin brother, Joshua. They lived in Aurora, Colorado. And when they found Caleb, he was lying on the floor with a shoelace wrapped around his neck. It was wrapped tightly around his neck. He tried to save him. He ended up spending 19 days on life support. He was ultimately pronounced dead a short time afterwards. And the father says, look, my son learned all these great skills from these videos. He learned how to play guitar and soccer and cooking. But at some point, he also learned about the blackout challenge, in which participants will cut themselves off from oxygen until they pass out. And this father begged physicians to try to save his son. He, you know, the father said, I felt like my son was drowning. I tried to give me his hand. I needed to reach out and pull him back up, you know. And he says, you know, I was looking at my son drown. And that's pretty much what happened here. It was a TikTok challenge. And unfortunately, his son ultimately died. And this is a heartbreak that no family should ever have to go through. So putting it on your radar in just a second, Dr. Leonard Sachs will be joining me. He is a child psychologist. He is also a very gifted physician. And we can take a few of your calls and questions for him as well. But one other issue, too, that we'll get his take on as well. Suicide rates. We've been talking about this for a while. And, of course, I saw a very stunning number that 1 in 5 high school kids have considered suicide during the pandemic. And something else I don't really understand, over half of those kids say they suffered emotional abuse at home. So what's going on there? A lot to talk about. In fact, let me bring into the conversation right now Dr. Leonard Sachs. And if you want to join us, you can dial into 888-914-9149. The doctor is a very gifted author. He wrote Why Gender Matters, Boys Adrift, On the Edge, and The Collapse of Parenting. If you want to read his books, go to leonardsachs.com. It's great to have him joining us today. Doctor, good afternoon.
Thanks for inviting me back.
Yeah, let's start with this blackout challenge first. These things take root. These kids do this. Unfortunately, a lot of people are losing their lives over it. You've written about kids. You've written about parenting. What's happening today? This was never an issue in my day, but then again, I didn't have cell phones when I was growing up. Are parents abdicating their roles, or is there nothing they really can do? I don't know what kids are serving.
If you know this, but I just wrote a big essay on TikTok, published by the Institute for Family Studies. If you just Google my name and TikTok, because you're absolutely right. This is blowing up. And a lot of parents don't even know, don't understand. TikTok is now the world's most downloaded app, and it is the world's most visited website. It's ahead of Google, which is number 2, and Facebook, which is number 3. Every day, more than 1 billion different videos are viewed on TikTok. And what makes TikTok different, really different from YouTube or Instagram or anything like that, is the algorithm. It's this fiendish algorithm that figures out what you like way better than YouTube or Instagram ever did. And it is freaky. Kids are telling me TikTok knows me better than I know myself. Wow. TikTok knew what I wanted before I did. And I'm hearing about schools, middle schools, where all the kids are addicted to TikTok and they're smuggling in their phones and looking at this. Parents don't realize this is a whole different animal we're dealing with. And so, for example, psychiatrists are reporting this explosion of girls worldwide who are shouting out beans, not just any Tourette syndrome word, but specifically beans, the word what? Beans. Wow. It turns out that there's this girl in England who's gotten this huge following on TikTok, who's TikTok's leading influencer on Tourette syndrome, and she shouts out beans. So psychiatrists are calling these girls Evies because they're mimicking what Evie Field in England is doing. And they're finding this throughout the United States. They're finding this in the South Pacific. Anywhere kids have internet access, this contagion is spreading. It sucks kids in, and parents don't even know what's going on. So a major focus of my essay is, what are parents supposed to do? Because if you're in sixth grade and all the other kids are on this, then you want to be on this. And parents will say, well, I'm going to look at your phone and see if I know what you're doing. And what they don't realize is that kids create a different account. Or in affluent families, kids have another phone the parents don't even know about. And so parents are way behind the curve on this, many of them.
Yeah, of course, they can borrow somebody else's phone. There's always access to it. So what do parents do? I mean, I say to my wife all the time, I'm so glad we have young adult children now, because raising kids today, my gosh, the challenges for so many parents. How do you keep your kids safe from these ridiculous challenges that also come up on TikTok? Of course, you got the blackout challenge or the choke challenge, and there were lots of others too. People climbing on ladders, on boxes, and you know what I'm talking about here. What can parents do?
Well, as you said in the intro, you got to know what your kids are doing with their phone. And you got to remove the phone. No phones at the dinner table. Come on. Dinner table is for you to talk to your kid and listen to your kid and have a conversation. Kids should not be in a bedroom alone looking at a screen ever. Banish the bedroom. Kids should be in a family room or a kitchen when they're doing their homework. That's not just my advice. That's the official guideline of the American Academy of Pediatrics. You don't want kids alone looking at a screen. That's never healthy. So in my essay I just wrote on TikTok, I've got specific guidelines on parental monitoring apps that actually work, that can limit how much time your kids are spending on their device, that are easy for parents to use. And I think that's part of it. But the number one thing is you got to make sure you know what your kid's doing with your phone, and they should not be in a room alone with a cell phone.
Yeah, on another issue, too. And if you want to join us, feel free to dial in. It's 888-914-9149. I saw this stat that 1 in 5 kids in high school have considered taking their lives. But there was another part of that. And I said, okay, COVID is underway. We see these numbers moving younger all the time. The other part of that study said that over half of them suffered some sort of emotional abuse at home. And you know, during the pandemic, kids admitted they were using like tobacco and marijuana and even tapping into prescription opioids and alcohol and a lot of other things. It's high school. What happened that kids went so off the rail, and what was going on with this emotional abuse? I mean, I would think, I don't know what would drive that. Is a pandemic that, you know, detrimental to the family dynamic?
Well, I'm looking at that CDC study as you speak, it's gotten a lot of press, but I think in some ways it's been a little bit misrepresented. I mean, people are jumping on the fact, for example, that they said 9% of kids in the survey had reported having attempted suicide. 20% had considered attempting suicide, 9% had attempted suicide. And that obviously sounds like a crazy high number, but when you look at their baseline from 2019, their baseline is 8.9% had attempted suicide. So a change from 8.9% to 9.0% is not huge. And the survey, I don't want to get real technical here, but the survey methodology here, they got a very broad definition of what it means to have attempted suicide. So they're inflating the numbers somewhat. And also the change from 2019 to the survey was conducted January through June of 2021, not as huge as the press coverage would lead you to think.
But we are seeing, you know, suicide at record levels, right, amongst young kids today?
Not all-time record levels. Actually, the records were set between 20 and 30 years ago, and boys still outnumber girls in the proportion committing suicide, but we do see a rapid rise among American girls, without a doubt, who are attempting and committing suicide. And by attempting suicide, I mean that they had to go to the hospital. So, there's certainly a rise going on here. But one of I think the important takeaway that I got from that CDC report is very similar to the takeaway from Gene Twenge's, I think, much better study. A researcher in California named Gene Twenge did a nationwide survey during the pandemic and found pretty much what the CDC found. In that, yeah, there's been a rise in anxiety and depression among kids since the pandemic began. But both these studies, Gene Twenge's study and the CDC study, find that whether or not kids are connected to others is the key. Wow. That kids who were connected to others, whether it's their parents or a close friendship with another peer, they were protected. They were much less likely to experience feelings of sadness, hopelessness, wanting to kill themselves. Gene Twenge found you can ask an American teenager one question, and you can say with confidence whether this kid is doing better or worse as a result of the pandemic. And that one question she found in her survey was, since the pandemic began, have you grown closer to your parents?
Wow.
Have you grown closer to your parents? If the answer is yes, if the kid says yes, he's actually less likely to be depressed than he was in 2019. Look, before the pandemic, a lot of kids were overscheduled. They were going from school to soccer to computer coding class, and they were overscheduled. The pandemic put an end to a lot of that, and all of a sudden, kids were locked down at home with parents, and some parents said, hey, you know what? We're going to take advantage of this. We're going to spend family time together. We're going to go for walks together. We're going to play board games together. Gene Twenge finds those kids are thriving. But other parents followed the bad advice from the New York Times, which was to let your kids spend as much time with their screens as they want to. New York Times published two articles early in the pandemic saying, don't worry about the rules anymore, kids, or it's lockdown. Kids just have to spend all their time in front of their screens. Parents who follow that bad advice, those kids are doing much worse, Gene Twenge found. If those kids say, no, I have not grown closer to my parents as a result of the pandemic, these kids are holed up in their bedroom looking at the screen, and they are much more likely to be sad, hopeless, anxious, depressed than they were before the pandemic.
Wait, I just sit here and I wonder what the long view is. You know, we're in the midst of this right now. 10 years from now, we're going to be able to look back with retrospect and have a clearer understanding of how detrimental this type of technology has been in the hands of our kids? And will there be new protocols or procedures to protect our kids? Or will the country just be a mess? I mean, how do you see it?
I'm very concerned the country is just going to be a mess because I'm concerned about the parents. You know, yeah, I'm hearing from all these schools about the kids who are addicted to TikTok, but then the parents sometimes don't know better, you know, and I may have shared with you before, I was at a middle school, and I was, as I do at many schools, I speak to the kids in the afternoon, then I speak to the parents in the evening. And I said to the kids in the afternoon, I said, kids, I'm going to be talking to your parents this evening. I'm going to tell them to install parental monitoring software on your phone that's going to limit you to no more than 20 minutes a day on social media. And this middle school kid raises his hand and he says, can you tell me how to install that software, that app on my mom's phone? And he proceeds to tell the whole school how he gets home from school and he wants to talk to his mom about what happened at school. And she's scrolling through her Instagram. How is this kid supposed to develop good habits if his mom is on social media all the time? So that's my concern.
Well, my guest, Dr. Leonard Sachs, if you want to join us, the number here is 888-914-9149. Feel free to join the conversation. Another issue too, Doctor, while I have you, I know we only have you for a limited time today. I came across another story. We've been dealing with a lot of these male swimmers swimming as females, and the whole transgender issue has created, I think, a lot of confusion for kids. And now we've got the Biden administration coming out, and they're endorsing, you know, transgender youth sex change operations.
Yep.
For top surgery, hormone therapy. Yeah. Your thought on that? The administration released a series of documents, even a video, that encourages gender reassignment surgery and hormone treatment for minors. It's almost like they're
I was alarmed. I'm very concerned. On March 31st, the Biden administration released an official document, whitehouse.gov, officially going on record saying that they endorse all forms of gender-affirming care, including not only medication but surgery for children. And, you know, the United States was founded on the idea that we are a union of free and independent states. And look, I've spoken on this topic in Minot, North Dakota. I've spoken on this topic in San Francisco, California. I tell you, it's a long way from North Dakota to California, not just geographically. They're really different cultures. And if you're going to have a union that brings North Dakota into the same country with California, then you have to allow each state to address these issues in their own way. And what works in California doesn't necessarily work for the whole country. The Biden administration does not appear to understand this. They are literally going to war with Texas in this document that you just mentioned.
Right.
They single out Texas because Texas, governor of Texas, does not endorse this idea of gender affirming surgery. And they basically say, we're going to do everything we can to bring the hammer down on Texas. The union of 50 states doesn't work if you got the federal government saying, we want everybody to be California. And I think it's a real problem. There's a few times in our nation's history, notably the Civil War, notably 1957, when President Eisenhower sent the 101st Airborne into Little Rock to desegregate the schools. And the Biden administration is basically saying that this is it. Again, we have to invade Texas, and drawing this false analogy between the civil rights movement and this destructive and deforming intervention, irreversible interventions now officially endorsed by the Biden administration, gender-affirming surgery for children. It's really troubling. It is psychotic. And by psychotic, I mean it is utterly detached from reality.
It is. You know, we get who we vote for, and it frustrates me to no end when I see policy after policy that directly attacks life and attacks family. The ripple of that that attack is going to be far-reaching. So, you know, the Biden administration, Joe Biden, I think he actually was in this video that was released. He spoke, you know, on this whole issue of transgender children, and he told parents that, you know, transgender children, he told the parents who've got kids like this, look, affirming your kid's identity is one of the most powerful things you can do to keep them safe. He saw this as a good. He went on to say that the, you know, as you pointed out, the administration is going to fight how states want to limit, like, transgender athletes and how they compete. I want to pick up on the first point of that, and we can also talk about the second. Affirming your child's identity as being transgender, encouraging them to go down that pathway, pumping them full of hormones when they really can't make that decision themselves. How's that one of the most powerful things a parent can do? How does that keep a kid safe?
Well, again, that's what I mean by psychotic. Now, President Biden with all due respect, he's not a clinician. I am seeing these kids, and I can tell you just about every one of these kids is struggling with major psychiatric issues, most often depression. And these kids then have watched some YouTube video or some TikTok video that says, hey, you're depressed, you're lonely, you're trapped in the wrong body. If you just transition to the opposite sex, it's going to solve all your problems. And these are kids. They fall for it. And instead of the grown-ups saying, hey, I understand you're having a tough time, but starting hormones and pretending that you're the opposite sex is not going to make it better. And there's no evidence that it does. And there's compelling evidence that it does not. The grown-ups need to be supporting these kids, absolutely, but helping to guide them back to sanity. And instead, we've plunged into this looking glass world where the people who ought to know better are now pushing the kids farther down this dangerous path.
Wow. Maggie, why don't you open your mic? Let me bring you on rather than me share that. Maggie just sent me a message here over my phone system. And Maggie, you have to share this with Dr. Sachs.
Yeah, doctor, I have an aunt here in Illinois who has been a teacher for many, many, many years. And she was listening to the broadcast and texted. She said that here in Illinois, there's been a change in policy, and feminine products have now been installed in all of the boys' bathrooms.
Wow.
From fourth grade up. But here's the kicker. This is what really boils my blood. In the girls' bathrooms, you have to pay 25 cents to receive your feminine product. In the boys' bathroom,
they're free.
They're free because otherwise it's considered discrimination.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, the harm of this insanity goes deeper. I mean, obviously we laugh at this because it is psychotic.
Crazy.
But it is also confusing, and it's confusing in a profound way, because until very recently, one of the things a girl or boy could be certain of is that they were a girl or a boy. And yet now the grown-ups are systematically taking a sledgehammer to that foundation of adolescent development, which is that maybe you're not a girl. Maybe you're a boy trapped in a girl's body. And look, adolescence is tough enough, trying to figure out who you are and what you want to be, when your existence as a female human is now called into question and you're encouraged to problematize and deconstruct who you are. It is, I think, very much creating this whirlwind of events that's driving this explosion in anxiety and depression among girls, which began before the pandemic, and it's just getting worse.
My guest today, Dr. Leonard Sachs, always great to talk with him. He's a psychologist, a gifted physician, an author of Why, a couple of books I'm going to put on your radar, and I'll take a call or two before we run out of time. Why Gender Matters, great read. Boys Adrift, On the Edge is another one, and The Collapse of Parenting as well. You can check him out at leonardsachs.com. Little side note here, the good doctor graduated Phi Beta Kappa from MIT, just five semesters. Love that, doc. We'll go to Susan in Chicago. Hi, Susan. Good afternoon. Susan, you're on the air. Go right ahead. We got to wait for her to catch up, I guess. If you're on hold, if you could do me a favor, just make sure that you're on the line when we go to you. Susan, go ahead. All right, I'm going to dump him. I'm going to leave it right there. Susan, I'm sorry. I won't be able to get your call because I'm up against the clock here. Doctor, I'm going to leave it there, too. I got to take a short break. Before I leave you, though, the next issue I'm going to be dealing with is the bizarreness that we're seeing. And bizarreness is even a word. The incredibly weird behavior that we're seeing in people. You know, we've got Will Smith walking up on national TV, assaulting somebody, slapping him in the face. We've got people on airlines, you know, punching stewardesses. So you've got crime, people walking into stores and robbing it. Everybody else is around. Nobody does anything. Why are people acting so weird? I'd like to get your take on that, too, before I dive into that in greater detail. Caesar's other types of strange behavior have all soared recently. And I don't know if you've thought about that at all.
Well, I have, and I've written about it as well. And I actually go back to a line that Friedrich Nietzsche wrote over 100 years ago, the German philosopher. He said, these modern atheists think that they can take away the belief in God and hold on to Christian culture and Christian morality. He says they are mistaken. It's all one piece. If you take away the belief in God, you've destroyed the foundation and the rest will crumble. It was a prophecy. And I think we are now seeing the fulfillment of Nietzsche's prophecy that as the society has moved away from a belief in God, everything is falling apart. Because if you don't believe in God, why not? Just do whatever you want. Who cares about your neighbor? All those things that we grew up believing were self-evident, like do unto your neighbor as you would have them do unto you. It's not self-evident. Yeah. It's a Christian principle. And if you take away the foundation of Christianity, you lose that. And you go back to the jungle, and it's everyone for themselves.
Well said. Doctor, thank you. Looking forward to having you back again. It's always an enlightening conversation with you. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah. Thanks again.
You got it. That's Dr. Leonard Sachs. Check him out at that website as well. And his books are all well worth reading. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation, why people are acting so strange, so weird. We'll also explore Americans. They're experiencing unprecedented stress levels. I'll share what a new poll is revealing. That and more straight ahead. Today's show brought to you in part by Sony Pictures production, Father Stu. This biopic shares the conversion and ordination of Stuart Long in movie theaters nationwide on April 13th.
This is where human nature reveals itself. We are used to living in a world that, you know, you turn on the light switch and the lights come on, where you use the faucet and water comes out, where you flush the toilet and it goes away. We're used to that. We just say, that's how things work. That's not how things work. That's how they get to work when everyone does their part. But that's unusual. Like that is, in some ways, it's unprecedented in human history that electricity is predictable. It's unprecedented in human history that plumbing is predictable. It's unprecedented in human history that when it snows up here in the north, that there's gonna be people who get into trucks and they get the snow off the roads. We just expect that that's what's going to happen. So we get lulled into this false sense of security. This is what always happens. People are just good. And then they get pushed. And then there comes someone who says, I'm not gonna obey the rules. And you realize, what do you do then?
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I thought that was really insightful. That was, of course, Father Mike Schmitz. You know, what do you do when rules are out the window? We just assume that things are going to operate the way they are, but we're seeing people walk into stores now and rob them, and nobody do anything about it, right? We are seeing a rise in crime. We're seeing looting. We're seeing war taking place in Eastern Europe. I mean, sovereign nations just being rolled over because somebody's got nuclear weapons or a bigger army. What happens when rules go out the window? Let's talk about that, okay? How do we still connect with our brothers and sisters when divisiveness tries to tear us apart? I think the world was really quite shocked. Maybe not shocked. I don't know. I don't know what the right word is. When Will Smith, you know, gets up and he smacks Chris Rock at the Oscars. When that went down, I swore it was fake. I really thought it was. I realized it wasn't. I mean, who would do that? You're going to commit assault on national television? Really? Over a joke? Come on. And then what happens? Will Smith gets up there all teary-eyed and cries for his acceptance speech and gets a standing ovation. Why are people acting so weird? Why are people so strange? You hear the reports all the time about people on airlines. They're punching stewardesses, right? There was a story I came across. A man was arrested after he punched a gate agent at the Atlanta airport. The gate agent looked like he was about to punch the guy back until his female colleague stood on some chairs and entered the situation, right? And these stories go on and on during the pandemic, disorderly, rude, unhinged, this type of contact, this type of behavior seemed to have caught on. And you're seeing it, bad behavior of all kinds. think people become more rude. They're careless when it comes to physical violence. You see these TikTok videos. We talked about the choke, the blackout challenge. There's others with guys driving cars and really endangering their lives and others. Americans are driving more recklessly. They're crashing their cars or killing pedestrians at higher rates. You know, in early 2021, they saw the highest number of unruly passenger incidences. That's what the FAA was saying. Healthcare workers, God bless healthcare workers. They say that their patients are behaving more violently than they've ever done before. In fact, the article that I had read said that in Missouri, hospitals plan to outfit nurses with panic buttons. Have we gotten to the point where a nurse needs a panic button? I guess we have, right? Schools, we've got this disruptive behavior on the uptake, murder, guns, right? In 2020, the U.S. murder rate rose by nearly a third. It's the biggest increase on record. It rose again in 2021. I know people are scared to death. They're having guns put in their face, and their cars are being stolen. Carjackings have gone up. And look, I can go on and on. You get the big picture, right? What I want to talk about is why. What on earth is happening? And how did Americans go from, you know, clapping for healthcare workers to threatening to kill them? Huh? I mean, I've never seen anything like this. I am joined this afternoon by a longtime friend of the program, Mary Rice Hassan. She's a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, where she directs the Catholic Women's Forum. Check out her website. It's catholicwomensforum.org. Great organization. It's a network that aims to shape the culture and serve the church by ultimately amplifying women's voices and supported church teaching. And they do a wonderful work. It's good to have you with me today, Mary. Thank you for joining me once again.
Thank you so much, Drew, and great topic. Very interesting.
And it doesn't stop there, right? We know people are drinking more. People are more stressed out. I mean, the litany of things that go on. Mental illness is up. I'd love your take. What do you see happening? And there's, you know, with a pendulum, sometimes it can only swing so far and then it's got to come back. Mm-hmm. Where are we on that swing? And what do you see as the motivating cause of it?
Well, I think two things are happening, and we're seeing sort of an unfortunate convergence. We've been, over the past decade in particular, we've been in a steep decline in terms of religiosity, particularly among the middle-aged to young people, you know, the Gen Z, millennials, Gen X. There are marked differences in the rate of religiosity of the younger generation and the older generation, a marked difference in church going and in how often people pray. So just an orientation towards God. Our country is going through a dramatic shift, and that has consequences. So what we've gone through, the other factor that I see is the past 2 years have been a time of high stress with the pandemic, with people worrying and people being isolated and mental health issues going off the charts. And in situations like that, people break at the weak points. And conversely, those who have strength rooted in something deeper lean on that. And that gets them through the tough times. So I think part of what we're seeing is as our society has become less religious, and we tend to psychologize everything, and we're kind of not paying attention to the fact that our foundations, you know, so many families are weak in terms of their faith, in terms of their even their commitment to each other. We lose resilience as a culture, as a society, as individuals, and we also lose our sense of sin. So those internal restraints that we've all relied on in the past to keep people from doing things like, you know, walking up and slapping Chris Rock. I mean, that was kind of a long walk. It was a good 10 seconds that Will Smith could have thought and could have restrained himself. But now in our culture, there's sort of, we don't have those internal restraints, and people give themselves license to explode at the flight attendant on board the airplane or whatever it might be. So I see a combination of things that are unfortunately, you know, converging here between the decline of religious faith and the weakening of our social relationships, our families, and at the same time, greater stress. And that puts that pressure on these weak points. And unfortunately, it's causing a lot of breakage in persons, relationships, and kind of in our social interactions.
I think you're right. My last guest, Dr. Leonard Sachs, I had asked him that question before you came on. I think you might have heard him as well. He said the same thing. I mean, and it's something that nobody thinks about. You know, can we be good without God, right? What happens to society if we do not have God? I think disorder, I think chaos, and as I think you point out, a real selfishness begins to evolve. So the big question is, and you're right, we're seeing within the Catholic Church, you know, the N-O-N-E-S is those who have no form, those who have left the church, and they don't necessarily discount God, but they just don't believe in organized religion. But we're also seeing the rate of, you know, the diminishment of church attendance, the frequency of the sacraments. That's all in the decrease. And I think if we want to right the country, we've got to get on track. We were just talking about the president, too, with the transgender issue. Here you've got a Catholic president who is advancing policies and throwing the weight of the government, you know, in favor of things that are immoral and deviant and disordered, as opposed to defending life and letting the formation of his Catholic faith really influence, you know, his decisions. So it's a chaotic time, Doc.
It is, but you know what? It's also an opportunity. And that's what I think. Sometimes God gets our attention when things seem the worst. And I think we've got so many people who are kind of adrift, particularly young people, because for many of them, they haven't grown up in strong families. They've never even known the practice of religion. And yet they're searching for meaning. They're lonely. The youngest generation is called the loneliest generation. You know, their human heart is made for God, as yours and mine and your listeners. So they're searching, they're feeling that emptiness, but they don't know what's going to fill it. And so I see this as an opportunity. It's like people are realizing, gosh, I'm miserable. You know, this is, something's not working. And you can't just answer it all with psychology. You know, psychology has its place, but it doesn't fill that deepest hole in the human heart. So it's an opportunity.
Yeah, Augustine said, you know, you will always be restless, right, without God.
Yeah.
And can only rest truly in him, will only find peace with him. Jesus told St. Faustina, he says, the world will have no peace until it turns with trust to my mercy. My guest today, and you're more than welcome to join us if you would like, is 888-914-9149. Mary Rice Hassan's a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, also the founder of the Catholic Women's Forum. When we come back, we'll take your calls, and we will talk more. Looking at this phenomenon in the culture, why people are acting so strange, so weird, so unconstrained, right? And what's driving that? So stay with us. There is hope, though. You know, don't give up on America. I believe there's a lot of good in the hearts of a lot of people. We might seem outnumbered, but good always triumphs over evil. We'll be back. Stay with us. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The truth.
Thanks, Drew. Always a quest for the truth.
Now.
And it just reinforced why I love Relevant Radio, because you guys got the truth.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, and if you missed any part of the conversation, let me just give you a quick reminder. Yesterday we had a wonderful conversation in hour one about the decriminalization of marijuana. And just go to the podcast and you can download it. You can go to relevantradio.com, keyword The Drew Mariani Show, and check out that conversation or any of the wonderful conversations that we've had today. We've taken a look at war crimes with Dakota Wood today. Mary Rice Hassan is joining us, and I want to get you plugged into a website that'll be, I think, a real blessing to you, and I'm going to take a few of your calls now, too. PersonandIdentity.com. PersonandIdentity.com. It's also another one that Mary is behind. Mary, very quickly, before we jump into the phones here, tell us a little bit about that. What will we find there?
Sure. The Person Identity Project that I lead is designed to equip Catholics and Catholic institutions with the truth about the human person and knowledge about how to counter gender ideology, because we're getting so many questions about transgender issues, particularly regarding children and young people. And so we aim to give people the information that they need and resources.
Hey, let me just hit on that point just very quickly, because I'm curious. I've been talking about that a lot over the past several weeks with Leah Thomas, the male mm-hmm. who's swimming as a female. And there's lots of these different situations. We got the Equality Act that the Biden administration has championed. There's a lot of confusion and disorientation out there right now. Why transgenderism? Why has that taken such root and risen to such heights today? I don't understand what has driven that, because the majority of people who have to deal with that issue, with gender fluidity issues, it's relatively small.
Well, it was 0.002% of the population.
Yeah,
but when we look at the youngest people, the latest surveys show almost 10% of our oldest high school students and young college students identify as transgender or gender diverse. So what's happening is we've got this massive, well, I think they're very confused, Drew. I think there's a social contagion going on, but there's also a distorted messaging that says you can be whoever you want to be. You know, you self-determine who you are. My body, my choice. It comes out of that long line of distorted thinking. So it's, in a sense, it's not new, but it's really destructive because it's capturing so many of our young people and pulling them down this path.
You're right. PersonalIdentity.com, great resource for you. Let's jump into the phones. We'll take a couple quick calls for you. Angie is listening to us in Payson, Arizona. Angie, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks.
Yeah, go right ahead, Angie.
So my thought, I haven't heard everything you guys have been talking about, but having some young children myself, and knowing their friends, and just how, say, vibrant the Latin community is, I feel like the fault, if you want to say something or someone is at fault, I think that the church, the Catholic Church, has some responsibility. I feel like we have dropped the ball either with catechesis, with the lack of reverence at the Mass, and things like this. I did hear part of what your guest was speaking to earlier, and I agreed, you know, that there are some stresses lately, but I mean, as far as there's been humankind, we've had stresses, we've had natural disasters, we've had wars, we've had disease. But I've not seen the church speak truthfully. When people get, you know, they're confused. Do we wear a mask or not wear a mask? And the vaccine, I've not seen the church tell people truthfully what is right.
Angie, I would disagree. I don't know what church you go to. I know many great bishops who have spoken very eloquently, very clearly on this. There's a lot of great churches as well. I share your frustration. You know, during the pandemic, there's a lot of confusion over masks. I've had doctors who said, hey, we shouldn't be wearing them from the very beginning. I have others who thought, hey, they're a great idea. People have different perspectives on some of these issues that are of a prudential matter. You know, when it comes to faith, when it comes to morality, I think the church is very clear and very unwavering. And Mary, I'll let you sound off as well. I'll let you share your thoughts.
Yeah, so I think, while it can be true that perhaps some individual bishops or priests are not speaking out enough, the church as a whole speaks very clearly about the moral issues, about conscience issues. I think it's sometimes us lay people who are not speaking out clearly, because for the past 50 years, most lay Catholics have tried to assimilate into the culture, to be, quote, just like everyone else. And now we're just like everyone else in terms of the average beliefs or practices of the average Catholic. So I think a lot of this comes back to us. Are we willing to take our own faith seriously? Are we willing to really teach it to our kids and live it with integrity? Are we willing to be bold and to share it clearly with others? I think that's where the responsibility comes back to. The church is very clear on its teaching.
Angie, thank you. I know you're not alone. There's probably others who share the same view. That's for sure. And pray for the church and pray for our leaders. But to your point, Mary, I think you're spot on. I mean, true conversion and true witness comes from us. It's got to begin in our own heart, in our own lives, if we want to affect others around us. And we are part of that church. So Patricia is listening in Austin, Texas. She's got a comment for you. Hi, Patricia. Sure. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hi. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Hi. I'm an elementary school specialist, and I work with K to 5 students. And we had a lot of people leave and retire last school year because it just got to be too much for teachers. And we had a new group of people came in. And these are professional women, and they are so mean. I just don't know how to handle mean women in the workplace. They're in their 40s, and they're just, they gang up on people. It's terrible. So other people are wanting to quit now because the new people that came in that are just being terrible to us.
All right.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. I think anyone who's leading an organization or a school or a ministry has to, in leadership, take the responsibility for setting the tone and the expectations. And people need to know what kind of what the guardrails are, what's accepted, what's allowed, and what's not. And as a culture, we've gotten so much more coarse and much more willing to insult people and to speak our mind, even if it's hurtful, without it being for any good reason, not to save someone from harming themselves or something like that. And I think social media contributes to that because we're so used to putting things up on the internet. You don't see someone's eyes when you've caused them pain. Yeah, we just, I think, have anesthetized ourselves a little bit. So, but we can recapture that. I think it takes leadership and it takes humility and people living that charity authentically and not being afraid to confront others if they are creating a toxic situation. Because I think in their hearts, most people don't want to do that.
Right.
So sometimes we don't have the self-awareness of the problems that our own actions are causing.
It's also hard for somebody like Patricia, though. I would think a lot of people are non-confrontational. So to really have to speak truth or tell those people to back down or to get, you know, to correct the situation can be difficult. But Patricia,
yeah,
I guess that's what you're going to have to do. Hey, thank you for your call. I do appreciate it. All right, we'll grab another call or two. We only have a few minutes left here. My guest today, by the way, is Omari Rice Hasson. We're taking a look at a whole litany of different issues here, from Americans experiencing unprecedented stress levels to just people acting so strange. Before I go back to the calls, just one final thought here. Yeah, I don't want to leave people on a down note, if you will. I don't think we should give up on America. I think there's a lot of toxic polarization out there. But in the end, I think there's a lot of people with good in their heart. Relevant Radio is one of those great fruits, and we're seeing conversion. We're planting those seeds of truth and faith, and we're trying to pierce that din, that cacophony of mistruth that's out there with the truth of Jesus Christ. I think that makes a difference. I only have about a minute left. I want to give you the final thoughts here on what you see for the future.
I will just affirm that in terms of Relevant Radio. I think Catholic radio has had a tremendous impact, and EWTN just across the world. I think we have to have confidence in the gospel and the power of the gospel. Remember what, the Lord started his church with 12 apostles and one who was unfaithful then. Yeah. And yet look at what grew from that. We have to have that faith and that fidelity in our own lives. And to just look for the good. The Lord has just a great promise for us, and there is good news to share. So that's what I'd encourage everyone is to, speak the truth with kindness, with love, but find the good news to answer that yearning and that desire for meaning that our fellow Catholics, but fellow Americans need.
You got it. Hey, Dr. or Mary, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate having you here with us. That's Mary Rice Hasson. Check out personandidentity.com. Personandidentity.com. Great resource for you. Check it out. I'm out of time for the day. I'll be back again tomorrow. Cale Clark is coming up. Stay tuned for him. Until our paths again cross, may God bless you.